From LPM,
Louisville Public Media.
Support for LPM podcasts comes from the Eye Care Institute and Butchertown Clinical Trials, where they strive for diversity, equity, and inclusion within their staff, patients, and clinical trial participants. To learn more, visit butchertown.clinic.
Just about the time we were preparing this episode, President Joe Biden was preparing to make a bold Earth Day announcement. In order to combat climate change, the U.S. will cut its global warming emissions by half over the next decade. His infrastructure and energy bills will be a big first step towards that, but he'll need to get those bills through Congress. And that will mean keeping all Democratic senators on board, and that includes West Virginia's Senator Joe Manchin. Well, just a couple of days before Biden's big announcement, Manchin joined another well-known West Virginian, Cecil Roberts of the United Mine Workers. They had an announcement of their own.
I think it would be a travesty, and we won't support the elimination of the jobs that we still have.
Roberts was basically drawing a line in the sand, saying he'll defend the few jobs left for his coal miners. And here's the thing. With Manchin joining him, it means Biden will at least have to listen. So now you know why I like to say that the path to climate action is going to have to run through coal country. And you know why we like to say, welcome to Appalachia America. I'm Jeff Young. This week, conversation with Cecil Roberts about coal, climate, and just what this just transition really means.
The people in Appalachia believe that there'll be the second coming of the Lord before they see a just transition.
And we'll hear from a former coal miner who just made a transition of his own.
I feel like it's my responsibility as a former coal miner who has help bring some of this devastation to our area. I feel like it's partly my job that I help change and bring something better.
It's Welcome to Appalachia America. Cecil Roberts has been president of the United Mine Workers of America since 1995. Only one person has held that position longer, and that was the legendary John L. Lewis. But unlike Lewis, who enjoyed the union's height of power and influence, Roberts' tenure as president has come during an epic decline in the coal industry in the U.S. Coal employment has dropped by more than half in the past decade. More than 60 mining companies have declared bankruptcy, coal-fired power plants are closing, and the number of hourly coal workers is now at the lowest point since the government started keeping track of them. Now, a Democratic president, a president who has the support of most organized labor, has an ambitious clean energy agenda to combat climate change. That could spell the end for what's left of coal in the U.S. So Roberts and the UMWA laid out principles that they want Biden to include, things like targeted tax credits for jobs in coal country and support for the controversial technology known as carbon capture and storage, which could, theoretically at least, keep some coal burners in business. And that's where we started our conversation. Roberts says he thinks the country owes it to his miners and to coal communities to make sure that they don't suffer more economic loss and more pain as part of our climate goals.
People might say, well, the UMWA is being awfully bold here, proposing ideas to the President of the United States and to the Congress of the United States. But I don't think it's all that bold, given the fact that there's a long record here of sacrifice by coal miners in this nation, whether it's the number of miners that's been killed or the number of miners that's died from black lung to make this country great. There's just no other group of workers that have contributed that much to this nation's economy. The coalfield communities have been devastated. And I'm talking about the people who had depended on various businesses that supported the coal industry. The numbers are a little deceiving, too. When you take the 7,000 miners that lost their jobs last year, there's another 28,000 people lost their jobs because of the loss of the coal jobs. There's a high ratio of support jobs attached to coal mining. And we look at these coalfield communities, the underfunded programs, whether it's police, nurses, doctors, firefighters, a lot of those jobs don't exist any longer because the counties can't support them, the cities can't support those jobs. And it's been a more difficult place to live, and it shouldn't be that way when you have a part of your country that's given so much. And by the way, just one more thing in addition to that, these are the most patriotic people on earth. If you look at statistics, take West Virginia, for example, on a per capita basis, more West Virginians were killed in the Vietnam War than any other state. And that those statistics would hold true for almost all of Appalachia.
Mm-hmm. You yourself served in Vietnam before coming back to work in the industry. What do you propose here to possibly change some of those pretty grim statistics?
Well, one of the things that is pretty apparent that part of the administration's program is to go to a decarbonized economy, which would make things much worse if there's not a program in place here, some way to give some comfort to people who are working in energy. And let's think about that a little bit broader than coal for a second. One of the things that's happened over the last 10 years has been jobs being created in the gas industry. We discovered how to extract gas from fracking, 20 years ago or somewhere in that neighborhood. And we have now abundance of gas. But remember this, to decarbonize completely the nation's economy, natural gas can't be part of that. So when we propose that we find technology that would remove carbon from the burning of coal and also from the utilization of gas, we're protecting those gas jobs. Carbon capture and sequestration is what we're talking about. What we've suggested, and some would might say, well, you're thinking too broadly here. I think we need to start thinking about the jobs we've given up here and bring those jobs back to the extent we can. Think about this. We're going to spend billions of dollars if this infrastructure bill goes forward, and I'm all for spending that kind of money for infrastructure. But are we really going to then turn around and import steel into this country to build the bridges and the buildings that we need across this country when we could have jobs in this country that would, in a domino effect, create jobs in the hardest hit places in the United States, and that's Appalachia? We should bring these jobs that are now being done in places that pay cheap labor and don't have the best health and safety records and treat people poorly and bring those jobs to the United States. By the way, this is part of Biden's plan. It's just not me talking. Make those middle-class jobs. Right now, almost all these renewable energy jobs don't pay enough to support a family. They're nowhere near the wages that a coal miner makes.
So a lot to unpack there. I want to start with how your proposal, when you rolled it out at the press club, and how it was perceived. For example, the New York Times had a headline, Coal Miners Union Indicates Willingness to Accept a Switch to Renewable Energy in Exchange for Jobs. Is that your message?
That is an odd message. In fact, I'm not real sure how they went from what we said, what we handed out, to that headline. But the article, when you read it, was good. I mean,
Right. But if you had to clarify that point, what is your main takeaway here? You're not against renewables per se, right?
Well, renewables exist now. So to act as though there isn't electricity being produced through solar panels or wind turbines and act as though that's not going to continue is like shutting your eyes and saying, please go away. It's not going to happen. What we're saying is we recognize that we're going to continue to use renewables. So let's produce those wind turbines here. Let's produce those solar panels here. But let's make them good union jobs while we're at it. By the way, that's not too outrageous because that's part of Biden's plan.
Well, to that point, you know, we spoke with Gina McCarthy, the president's climate advisor, and I played for her a quote from you. And so I'll return the favor here.
And labor has to be a big part, and they have to be at the table. You know, we don't want just any jobs here. We want high paying jobs, and we want union jobs. You know, these folks built our country on the backs of union workers. Let's make sure those union workers actually get benefited.
Now, I'm sure you echo that sentiment, but provide some reality check here. Will these new jobs that also address climate change be high-paying union jobs?
One of the things we've said here is it's one thing to want these things to happen. It's another thing for those things to materialize. And we're going to be a voice here for saying, if they're not high-paying jobs and they're not union jobs, and we're not going to be supportive of jobs that do not support middle-class families. These workers should not be the ones that consistently have to pay for the mistakes we make in this country when something could be done about it. Bankruptcy laws in this country are obscene.
You're staking a lot on carbon capture and storage, or carbon capture and sequestration, as you pointed out, not just for coal power, but for other heavy industry that produces a lot of CO2 emissions. So here's my thinking on carbon capture and storage. I've been hearing about the promise of CCS for, gosh, decades. And yet, there's not a whole lot to show for it. It just doesn't seem like the industry is willing to or interested in making it happen. So why do you think it's different now? Why do you think we would now see this technology come about when we haven't for the past couple decades?
You know, I'm not the only one that has ever thought this was a great idea, by the way. I can shut my eyes and still see Senator Barack Obama campaign for the presidency of the United States in Lebanon, Virginia, Lebanon High School, packed house. I spoke right before him. So he knows he's in cold country, and he knows that people are worried about their future. And he makes a great speech, and he says, if we can find a way to put a man on the moon, we can find a way to burn coal cleanly. Here's the reality of the situation. Does anybody really believe that it's impossible to find a way to burn coal cleanly? We can. We just haven't decided that it's worth the investment.
And I definitely take your point about it being a global phenomenon, and the rest of the world is not losing its appetite for burning coal, especially China, India, most populous countries. I guess I'm asking you, bottom line this for me. What's your message to this administration when it comes to clean energy and climate change policy? Is it really, look, we need carbon capture and storage?
Well, I think that we're on board with many of the things that the president has proposed, quite frankly. We want to bring jobs here that are currently in China. We want to make those good paying jobs and put those jobs in the hardest hit areas of the country. And that's where I'm from and not far from where you are right now, that need these jobs. And we want to make them good paying jobs. We want to make them union jobs. All of those are part of the president's position and his team. I think it would be a travesty, and we won't support the elimination of the jobs that we still have. Another thing people don't talk about, Jeff, is how much more sacrifice do we have to make here? Because if you go back to the Paris Accords, to one segment of our society where we've met our commitments is the electric generation sector. How did we do that? We shut down coal mines and coal-fired power plants. So the people who had those jobs have already sacrificed for the environment now, and we're looking at them. So you got to give us a little more. And pretty soon, people don't have anything left to give. I mean, so many people have lost their jobs to make that happen. Mm-hmm. And so when people look at us and say, you've got to make a commitment, I wonder about the commitment we've already made here in terms of economies in southern parts of West Virginia, eastern Kentucky, and southwest Virginia, southwestern Pennsylvania, for that matter, southern Ohio. Those areas have all been hit hard because of unemployment and the sacrificing of coal-fired power plants to cleaning up the environment.
You know, I've always thought of you as a long-range thinker, which I'm sure is part of why you've been such a long-serving leader of your union. So I'm going to ask about what you see ahead. If you think, I don't know, 5-10 years down the road, what does the UMWA look like? What does the coal industry look like? What does Appalachia look like, do you think?
Well, if we do not do some of the things that we have proposed and some of the things that the Biden administration has agreed with us on, or maybe we're agreeing with them, Appalachia is going to be more devastated than it is now. So what's supporting the economy in West Virginia and Eastern Kentucky and Southwest Virginia now? Still, the best paying jobs that you can find are attached somehow to the coal industry. If you eliminate those jobs, and that's just in one area that I'm talking about right now, you're going to see some devastation economically that none of us want.
And if you do manage to strike a bargain here and some of these things do come to pass, what might the future look like?
I think the future might very well be much brighter than it looks right now, for sure. For example, if you brought manufacturing jobs to Appalachia, manufacturing jobs tend to last a long, long, long period of time. I see a future, it could be bright if we do the right things here.
Cecil Roberts is president of the United Mine Workers of America. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Jeff. It's been very nice seeing you again. And maybe in this pandemic, so we can see each other in person.
I'd like that. Thank you. Now, you know, part of what makes Cecil Roberts' position on climate and energy so very interesting, of course, is his long relationship with Senator Joe Manchin. And that makes the politics of coal and climate change, let's just say, tricky. Curtis Tate is with us now for some observations on that. Curtis covers energy and the environment for the Ohio Valley Resource from our partner station, West Virginia Public Broadcasting. Hi, Curtis.
Hey, Jeff.
First, let's start with main takeaways from what we heard there from Cecil Roberts.
Well, I think he's trying to strike a balance, and that's a very hard thing to do when basically your membership is coal miners. He doesn't want to put any of them out of work. There are still thousands of them employed in the industry, including in West Virginia. But at the same time, I think that you hear some recognition from him that things are changing. So he does seem open to bringing wind and solar manufacturing to West Virginia using tax credits to enable that. And that's something that we haven't heard from him a lot before, but he doesn't have a whole lot of other options at this point to try to shore up his membership. So this is just kind of the next chapter in that story, I think.
So let's talk about how Senator Manchin factors in here.
Joe Manchin is probably the most pivotal vote in the Senate. He is a Democrat from West Virginia. He's the only Democrat from West Virginia. He has a reputation as a bit of a centrist or even a conservative Democrat. In the past, he's been very pro-coal and pro-fossil fuels. That really doesn't seem to be changing. So he wants to see existing coal jobs preserved as well. He wants the federal government to pursue carbon capture and storage. He wants the federal government to encourage steel production in the U.S., which would benefit West Virginia coal production.
But the White House needs Manchin. I mean, it's a 50-50 Senate, and he's the 50th D. So what are they going to do?
Well, they're going to have to give him something. And what that is not exactly clear. He does seem supportive of the use of tax credits to bring wind and solar manufacturing to West Virginia and employ those thousands of miners who've already lost their jobs. But he also doesn't want to see any more jobs lost. And it's really hard to understand how that works if the president's goal is to decarbonize the power sector, which would inevitably result in more job losses in the coal industry. So it's just not really clear at this point what could ultimately bring him on board and get that 50th vote that they absolutely need to push this forward.
Curtis Tate, thank you very much.
Thank you.
You can read the UMWA's position paper and get much more information at our website. It's appalachamerica.org, appalachamerica.org. Just ahead, a former coal worker who made a transition of his own from underground miner to solar entrepreneur.
We want to hear from you. What would you like us to take on in an upcoming episode? What do you think a just transition for Appalachia should look like? Send us a message to Ohio Valley Resource on Facebook or on Twitter, where our handle is at OVRESRC. Thanks for listening.
Until just a few years ago, Scott Shoup was one of those coal miners that Cecil Roberts was just talking about. Shoup is from Benham, a town in eastern Kentucky's Harlan County. You know, Bloody Harlan. He came from a long line of coal miners.
I'm actually a fourth generation coal miner.
Wow.
Yeah.
And did you know from early on, like when you were a kid?
Well, you know, honestly, it was kind of one of those things that you always knew in the back of your mind, but you also kind of wanted to be, you know, one of the ones that wouldn't accept it. I kind of always said, you know, I'm going to go to college, you know, get an education and move away from here. And I'm not never coming back. But I went off to college for a couple of years and I really didn't like being a student, just didn't like school. So I came back home and I seen real quick that if I was going to stay here, I was going into mines. So.
Do you remember first time you went underground?
I do. Yep. I do. Yeah, it's very intimidating, somewhat scary. A lot of the older guys like to give you a pretty rough time, you know, that first month or so. But man, it's like anything else. After you do it for X amount of time, it's no different than me getting up every day and doing what I'm doing now. It just becomes a way of life, man, and you really just, you don't think that much about it.
You know, hearing you describe your work and your experience, it sounds to me like you enjoyed being in the
industry. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's one thing that I'll always say and always be. I mean, I can't fault anybody for where I've came from. That's not a choice we make. It's kind of one of those things you just have to deal with what you're dealt. And I don't think it's wrong to have done what we've done in our area because that was just kind of how we grew and how we progressed in time. But my issue with people here and the coal industry is that we do know the lasting effects of it now, and we've seen it firsthand. So it is our fault if we don't step up and try to do something better and something different moving forward.
Hmm.
But, you know, as far as, yeah, being a coal miner, man, I'm proud to death to say I was a coal miner, and I respect coal miners. I was just talking to some of my buddies last night that are on the strike in Alabama with Warrior Met Coal. You know, they're on a big union strike down there. That was actually the last place I worked before I come out of the coal industry.
Well, when did you start thinking that you wanted to get out of the coal industry?
For me, like the more I climbed in ranks with that job, the more I kind of got to sit in on important meetings and hear lots of different discussions and talks and things on the industry. And I don't know, man, I just kind of started realizing at that time that coal was really probably heading out. As I started paying attention to our industry dying, I started noticing why and what it was leaving behind. I really started kind of looking around and seeing what these coal companies had left us to deal with for ourselves, from the economy to people's health around here to jobs to water contamination. At the same time all this was going on, my dad was really active in environmental things and was fighting really, really hard against like mountaintop removal and some other things in this area, trying to protect their water source. So kind of a combination of him into what he was doing and then just kind of putting my own stuff together, you know, I thought, it's my responsibility. I feel like it's my responsibility as a former coal miner who has helped bring some of this devastation to our area. I feel like it's partly my job that I help change and bring something better and different.
So when you made that decision, which I'm guessing was not an easy decision to walk away from a good paying job, did you know what was going to be next for you?
I had no idea. I really and truly didn't. I was in Alabama. Like I said, I was real unhappy with that job. Those guys down there are on strike for an absolute legit reason. I just was really getting to the point to where I was aggravated with my job in general. And then being away from home, the industry in decline and what it's leaving behind. And I just up and decided one day, honestly, man, I just went to work one day, decided sitting in the changing room, I wasn't working there no more.
Shoup says he had no idea what he was going to do next. His father, Carl, had been active with some community groups. They were fighting against mountaintop removal coal mining and working to grow new jobs and diversify the local economy. So that kind of stuff was in the back of his mind. He joined a program offered by one of those groups called the Mountain Association. And the program they had was for displaced coal miners who were interested in some retraining to do work in solar or energy efficiency. In addition to the certification, it offered help with a small business startup loan. Long story short, 3 years later, Shoup has his own company, New Age Solutions, which does energy audits for homes, installs efficient lighting for businesses. He says he has clients from New York to Texas.
One of the things that I'm most proud of that's probably 50 to 60% of our business is a solar thermal drinking water system. These solar hydro panels create 100% renewable drinking water out of sunlight and air. We've partnered with a food bank in McDowell County, West Virginia. We installed a large system there and they distribute it out to the citizens of the community because that's a really old coal community that's had their water contaminated from ground disturbance. And then we've also partnered with a food bank in Martin County, Kentucky, you know, that's notorious for contaminated water. We've installed a system there and they give the water out in food drives once a month also.
What an amazing trajectory, the arc of your career so far from, you know, working in coal mining, which produced energy for the rest of the country, but at a pretty high cost. Now here you are finding ways for people to save energy, use renewable energy. What does that feel like?
Well, I mean, it's satisfying. Heck, man, we've revolutionized this country. You know, we put us through two world wars with coal and energy and you know, we can still be that same energy provider. We just got to change streets and just take a little different avenue to get where we want to go, man. We can still be an energy provider, but just with renewables.
Are you hopeful about the situation now or what's your sense?
Yeah, I am. I'm definitely more hopeful than in past just because the prior administration promised to bring back an industry that was gone, which anybody with any common sense knew it was bullcrap. Nobody's bringing back coal. I mean, it's a supply and demand industry. And you definitely have to be more hopeful because, I mean, if you're not hopeful, then we're just headed for complete devastation because this area we can't get no worse. We've got to get better. Our backs are completely against the wall.
Scott Shoup, thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate your time, Jeff.
Scott Shoup's experience is proof of the creative work and organizing going on down at the community level all across Appalachian coal country, work to make new things possible. But as you could hear, they're also facing really big challenges, and it will take really big investment to scale up those solutions to meet the size of the challenge. This could be the moment when the push for climate action makes that kind of large-scale investment in coal country possible. Next time, we'll talk with our nation's new Energy Secretary, Jennifer Granholm. That's on the next episode of Welcome to Appalachia America. I'm Jeff Young. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to Appalachia America is produced by Jeff Young, the Ohio Valley Resource, and Louisville Public Media. We get support from America Amplified, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and the Solutions Journalism Network. Our audio editor is Rip Reinhard, and Suhail Bhatt created our website. Our theme music comes from Michael Lipton and Tristram Loza. For more information, visit us at appalachamerica.org.